the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get it going. We are underway. It is Thursday, November 7th. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget Seeker. Go download the new Seeker app as well. Get all your favorite Sportsnet podcasts and more on Seeker. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hopefully you're doing well on this Thursday. Did I say Thursday or did I say Wednesday? I don't know. I'm having a miserable day.
So it's a weekday. You got it.
I very well might have said Wednesday, in which case I know that it's Thursday, but obviously not well enough to get the day correct.
It's a game day, buddy. That's all that matters at the end of the day.
How are we doing?
Better than you?
Yeah.
That is not how I wanted to start that sentence, but that's what came out. Did you hear the hesitation after better? Just... we'll make it through, buddy. I got your back on this one.
Oof. What a stretch. Anywho, want to start with, as the Flames continue this road trip Thursday night in Boston, want to continue with, want to dive in, because there are a couple of players on that Bruins team that are somewhat familiar to the to Flames fans and to the Calgary Flames. Couple of former members of the Flames, couple of guys who spent time with the Flames last season by the names of Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov. And for the course, for the sake rather of this conversation, Nikita Zadorov doesn't exist. Like, sorry, he's not the guy that we're going to talk about. Good on him for signing that contract in Boston.
Get paid.
But I want to talk about Elias Lindholm, who signed a 7-year deal at $7.75 million in free agency. Want to start that this hour. Kicking it off with Elias and maybe the question that I'm curious about from you, I'm curious about on the text line at 960-960. How much do the Flames miss Lindholm now that he's been gone for almost a year? It was late January of this year, 2024, when he was traded to the Vancouver Canucks. So, you know, we're going on about a year, a little less than a year since he's been gone, probably about 10 months now since he's been gone. How much do they miss him? How much do they miss him on the roster? How much do they miss him in the day-to-day, so on and so forth? I'm curious where the text line would be at 960-960. Get those texts in on this Thursday. Because I do think they miss him to an extent. I think they miss him specifically because they are short a natural center on the NHL roster right now. Whether it's been Pospisil or Sharon Govich, or maybe at some point they give Zary a shot, whatever the case may be, I do think they miss him in that regard, because with Lindholm in the fold, they had Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund, and whoever was going to be their number four center. Right now they don't have that third center, and that has been a work in progress trying to find a replacement. That's where I think they miss him the most, but I'll say this, Vix. I think they miss him a whole lot less than I thought they would when they made that trade with Vancouver. I think they miss him a whole lot less than I thought was going to be the case. And I think that's a credit to some of the other players that have stepped up. I also think it's a little bit, not an indictment, but it's a little bit of a comment on how Lindholm's game dropped a little bit in the 2 years or almost two full seasons without Gaudreau and Tkachuk on the roster. So do they miss him? Yes. In my opinion, do they miss him as much as I thought they might? No, they don't. I'll be the first one to admit that they seem to have missed him on the roster a little bit less than I maybe gave it credit for.
I think they miss what he represents and what he would mean to the lineup more than the player. And that might sound cold, so give me a moment to explain here. But you kind of ran through it. Everything the Calgary Flames roster is missing right now is something that Elias Lindholm could fill. They're missed short on centers. Lindholm's a center. They're short on right shot centers. Lindholm's a right shot center. He's a guy that can play both sides of special teams. He's a guy that you could slot in to your top six. And those are all things that the Calgary Flames 2024-25 edition are missing. But at the same time, if you're the Flames and you're Craig Conroy and you can go back to late January, and if you want to reevaluate whether or not you're making that trade, you're making that trade 10 times out of 10 because of the massive amount you were able to return for Lindholm when it comes to what the Canucks gave up, whether it's Kuzmenko, a first pick, Yermo, Brustevich, so on and so forth. You do that 10 times out of 10, and where the Calgary Flames are as it stands on November 7th, the pieces that you got back are more valuable to the Flames today than I feel Lindholm would be. So yes, while they're missing a top six center, a right shot center, somebody who can win faceoffs, can play power play, can play penalty kill.
Yeah.
Sorry to Elias Lindholm, this sounds rude, but the Flames are in a better spot for what they were able to get out of Vancouver than where they would be if they had Lindholm still on the roster, in my opinion.
Well, and I agree wholeheartedly, Vix. Like, I, based on the contract he signed in Boston, 7 times 7.75, based on the contract that he turned down
what
in Calgary.
What a dodged bullet.
I really do think it is a little bit of a dodged bullet, and that's not, that sounds like we're being really harsh on Elias. This is coming from one of the biggest Lindholm fans there is when he was a member of the team. Like, you go back to the summer of, I guess it would have been the summer of 2023, I was pounding the table hard for them extending him long term and giving him that kind of 8x8 range contract. I was pounding the table hard on that. And I really believed signing him and extending him was the way to go. In hindsight, the way last season went, and I guess what I didn't know is, there were a couple things. A, Lindholm's desire, which I think was meh at best to re-sign here.
Mid, I think the kids call it.
Yeah, I believe it would be very mid. And so what we didn't know was that until once the season was underway. And the Flames knew, like, kind of in October, November, that there was not a big-time desire for him to sign. Especially, I mean, the Flames offered a lot. Like, 8x8, and I think they were willing to go more in terms of what was on the table.
Yeah, at one point, wasn't there a rumor floating around that they were willing to push it closer to 9 to make sure that it got done, and it never got done?
I don't know if it ever got to 9, but they
were... It got north of 8.
It was, like, I believe the final offer on the table was in the 8x8 range. That was the final kind of offer they tabled, but that wasn't Calgary's final offer type thing, and the conversation was, well, Scheifele just signed at 8.5. Like, what if we go to the Scheifele number? But I don't think it ever got to that point. I don't think they ever actually got into the nitty gritty of going into the 8.5, because it felt Thank like you. I think the Lindholm camp was kind of like, okay, maybe not re-signing here is the way to go. Anyway, that's in the past. But okay, the other thing I didn't know, so we didn't know in the summer of 2023 when I was very, very adamant that re-signing him was the way to go. The other thing I didn't know is the type of package the Flames would be able to get for him. And had I known that they were going to get all they got, a first-round pick and a pretty high-end D prospect, getting Kuzmenko into the fold as well, like, had I known they were getting all of that, yeah, you know what? Maybe I would have been a little bit more towards the, okay, trading Lindholm's the way to go, because Craig Conroy hit an absolute home run on that Lindholm trade in late January, getting Kuzmenko, getting Brustevich, getting the two picks, getting Yermo even. Like, that is a home run of a trade.
Oh, yeah.
And so you combine the fact that Lindholm's camp didn't feel like they overly wanted to be here. The price that they got back for him, like, I don't even care what happened in Vancouver, whether he re-signs or doesn't re-sign, the Flames still got an absolute haul.
I mean,
for
the
him.
Vancouver Canucks could probably be a little bit bitter about the return, at least their fan base now, but from a Flames perspective,
well,
you're
but you know
moon.
What? Lindholm kind of did what they wanted him to. Like, he didn't push them over the top, but he did get
That's
them
still
to round
five assets for 2.5 months.
Got him to round two, right? Got him to what, game 7 of round 2? Yep. And so I think at the very least you could say they really wanted him. I think they knew at the time there was a decent chance they weren't going to re-sign him, but Patrick Alvin wanted to make a push and go as deep in the playoffs as they possibly can. But, like, for me, the Flames winning that deal has nothing to do with what happened in Vancouver. Had he re-signed in Vancouver for 8 times $2 million, I would have still thought the Flames won that deal, because Guy didn't want to re-sign. They got an absolute haul for him, and on top of that, the deal that was on the table and what the Flames were willing to go to with Lindholm, I think that is a dodge bullet when it's all said and done. And that's not saying Elias is a bad player, because he's not. I'm a huge fan of the player, but I think what the Flames got, how it set them up for the future, what it indicated for the rest of the trades they were going to make in the spring of 2024, and where they're going now, I really do think that, yeah, do they miss him in the lineup right now? A little bit, I think. Maybe more than a little bit. Do I still think it was the right move to trade him? 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100. I think it was the right move to move him when they did and for what they got him.
And we could debate how much they miss Lindholm. I mean, you don't have to go back too far. You mentioned it. The Gaudreau-Kachuk-Lindholm line was the best line in the NHL in 2021-22. Gaudreau, 115 points. Kachuk, 104. Lindholm, 82. So even in that, there's a little bit of a pause. And I think a lot of the narrative was Lindholm allowed Kachuk and Gaudreau to do what they did best. But that's still 22 points behind the next guy on your line. Since that career year, he's had 116 points in 169 games. So to put that into perspective, because I kind of looked at it and I tried to ballpark what it would be. No, calculate it out. That's a 56-point pace over an 82-game schedule. So if you're the Flames and you were able to find a way to re-sign Lindholm at a number at or north of $8 million for 8 seasons, I'm not calling Elias Lindholm old, but at his age and what you're trying to do with your roster, that would have potentially been a dangerous contract with the benefit of perhaps a year's hindsight and taking a look at those production numbers over the course of the past 3 years after he hit his career year.
Well, I also think we, as you mentioned, I think we learned without Johnny, rest in peace, and Matthew on his line, maybe we're not talking about as much of a driver as we thought. Like, I still think Lindholm's a hell of a hockey player. He is.
I used to trumpet him as a top 25 center in the league as recently as the beginning of last season.
I still think that's probably true even right now. I know that the points have not been off the charts to start in Boston. I know he has not been a point per game guy over the last number of years. I think for him to be a bona fide high end number one guy or thought in that conversation, he's got to have the right line mates. And they found lightning in a bottle with those two guys on his line in 21-22. In saying that, I still think he is a driver. I still think he is an extremely strong two-way center. I still think he does a lot of good things. He's got a great shot, all those types of things. And he was Calgary's number one center without question. But is he a NHL bona fide number one guy? No, probably not. And here's what I'll say about Lindholm. He was the closest thing they had to a number one center since, I would say, Damon Lanko. Like, Damon Lanko was probably the closest they had to a number one center since Joe Nieuwendyk. And I know people would say, Damon Lanko, go take a look at a couple of the seasons Lanko put together playing with Jerome in the mid-2000s or towards the later 2000s. I mean, Damon Lanko is a hell of a hockey player and gave the Flames some great years. Was he ever a number one bona fide guy? Maybe not, but he was Calgary's closest to it since Nieuwendyk. And I think Lindholm's been the closest to it since Lanko. And that's still something that we all know they're looking for now.
Is that the lineage here when we're talking about centers that you can call no questions asked number ones? It goes Nieuwendyk, Lanko, then Elias Lindholm, because I think that's very fair. Now, where we'll disagree, and maybe I'm using the benefit of hindsight perhaps a little too much, I view Lindholm more as a facilitator as opposed to a driver. And he doesn't necessarily command the play, but he lets his two other wingers be able to do what they do best, because Lindholm is the security blanket. He's the guy that makes sure that if something bad happens, if one of his two line mates makes an error, is prone to a bad turnover, Lindholm's still finding a way to be in the right position in order to that not to be a significant detriment. But for me, and I say this in the benefit of hindsight, because as early as last season, I was calling him a top 25 center in the NHL. To me, he's more of a facilitator than a driver. Are we splitting hairs here? Is that semantics a little bit for you? I find them to be different things. I consider a driver somebody that takes over a shift and he's the best guy on his line and the other two follow, whereas the facilitator allows the better players around him to do what he does best.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think when I say, well, I guess what I say in Driver is that he is still a guy that can move the
puck. He still has the skills.
He's a guy that, you know,
to me, Eichel would be a driver.
He always does a nice job of moving the play north. And
okay.
But is he a guy that offensively drives a line? No, I would be much on your your side of things. So it probably is semantics. But I get what you're saying, and I tend to agree that I don't think offensively he is a guy that drives a lot of offense. He needs to have the right guys on his line to do that.
And just if I'm not doing a well enough job of describing my definitions, for example, Jack Eichel to me would be a driver, whereas Elias Lindholm is more of the facilitator type of player. But yeah, to circle back in this conversation, if I'm Conroy, I do this deal 10 times out of 10, knowing what you know now, knowing what you knew then, and knowing the direction, the vision you had for the team. I don't know how anybody could argue that it's anything but a slam dunk, and it's what the Calgary Flames should have done back in late January.
To the text line, as a Bruins fan, I was happy to hear they were in for Lindholm, but I wasn't happy with the contract. He'll never be a number one, let alone a replacement for Bergeron. This says, missing Lindholm's like missing an ex who is only good at a few things, but always burned your dinner. Okay, fair enough. Like, your ex-husband or ex-wife, do they burn dinner? And they're good at some things, but...
Well, that's when you just... That's when
it's
you...
Not a, it's not a bad... That's not a
That's
bad
a partnership,
one.
Though. If they're bad at cooking, you pick up the cooking duties.
Scott in Thorncliffe says, Patty, the Flames miss Lindholm as a place filler. If they would have signed him to that extension, that would put our franchise back easily another 5 years. And in hindsight, especially knowing what they got for him, like if you compare Lindholm at the contract that maybe they would have, say it was 8x8.5. Compare signing Lindholm to 8x8.5 to what they've got in return for him. Like, I don't think it's close where the organization is going now. I don't think it's close which one you're going to choose every single time.
Well, it also frees up $8.5 million of cap space for the remaining 6 years on the deal and gives you, what, roughly $4 million from the tail end of last season and this season in terms of what Andre Kuzmenko's salary is. So not only do you get those five assets, perhaps Kuzmenko, if he's somebody that's not fit for the long-term plan of the Flames, you get additional assets there. But you also save $8.5 million in cap space to help you do other things that you want to do.
Yeah, that's also very fair. And
so it's five assets plus maybe an additional asset plus flexibility against the cap.
Here's Jimmy says, I don't miss the money they offered Lindy. I don't miss the pouty face for a year and a half. I don't miss any of the soft Swedes they traded. I do miss Lindholm with Gaudreau and Tkachuk, however. This says, are you at all concerned with Hunter Brustevich's low numbers to start in the American League? Absolutely not. In fact, if you talk to those who watch the Wranglers most, if you talk to whether it's Brad Pascal or Trent Cull or Craig Conroy, you know, they're actually quite happy with the way things have progressed with Brustevich and really like the way he's playing down there. Yes, the offensive numbers aren't there, but I mean, it's his first time playing professional hockey full time. That's not something that always comes right away. Most of the reports, most of the returns on Brustevich, he's played every game. He's playing a regular shift. Yes, the offensive numbers aren't popping, but I think those things are something that come in time.
Well, I mean, just keep in mind, he's still literally a teenager playing pro hockey at the second highest level in the world for the first time ever, and he's going from a situation in the OHL with Kitchener where he would probably play upwards of 30 minutes a night. That's not going to happen as a teenager playing your first dozen games of pro hockey. So there is going to be a period of adjustment, and no, it should not cause any alarm bells to go off.
This says, I love Lankow. I always hated how his career ended. Yeah, it was such a unfortunate way Lankow's career came to an end. Remember, he took that just the largest, one of the biggest freak accidents I can ever remember. Luckily, it didn't end up impacting him more than it did. Like, he kind of got knocked down in front of the net in a game in Minnesota. As he got knocked down, a shot hit him in the back of the, well, I didn't say the back of the neck. I guess that's true. Yeah,
hit him in the back front of the neck.
That's a good
point. It's a throat, but you have a front of the neck.
Hit him in the back of the neck. And temporarily paralyzed him. Like, it was scary. I remember that day vividly. I was at Shank South working with Rob Kerr, and I just remember, like, all of a sudden, like, everybody was shook because This guy took a puck to the back of the neck in the one of the weirdest plays I can ever remember. He was not moving on the ice. It's the only time I can ever remember seeing, like, in a Flames game, like, actual, like, white faces look of concern. I remember correctly when he got stretchered off, like, there wasn't that thumbs up or anything that you get a lot of the times. And so I just remember Rob was on the air, I think, doing an intermission, and Peter Hanlon called. And Peter Hanlon, the VP of hockey ops, VP of communications. And I just promoted Peter Hanlon by accident. But Pete called Rob's phone, and Rob was on the air, so gave it to me. And I just remember, like, my stomach dropped. I'm like, oh my gosh, is Hanlon going to tell us, like, really bad news? And in fact, it was the opposite. He's like, Damon's doing okay, and he's moving. And, you know, some of the initial fears.
He's got feeling.
Yeah, yeah. But I just remember how scary that whole thing was. This from Greg. Vancouver fans may be sour he didn't re-sign in Van, but he was one of their better playoff performers. That comes from Greg in Varsity. And really, who cares if Canucks fans are sour? Very good point. I do think it's important to point out that Lindholm was very good for them in the playoffs. They don't get to game 7 against Edmonton without him, but they also gave up a lot for him and only got him for a few months.
I mean, he did have 5 goals and 10 points in 13 playoff games. On the flip side, though, it was a struggle, to say the least, in the regular season when he only had 6 goals, 6 assists in 26 games.
This from John. Can you not use the same logic on Lindholm with Anderson, who would bring a massive return? You could. And, you know, I think that that is a very valid counterpoint in saying all that. Guy that you drafted, guy that you developed, guy who's playing at the level that he's playing at right now. I still think re-signing Anderson, if you have the choice, if Anderson wants to stay, I think re-signing him is the way to go. Remember, Lindholm didn't want to stay. That was the. Yeah. There were 2 caveats, right? There was what they got in return and the fact that he wasn't really interested in re-signing.
That would be the big difference, and we're still a little ways out on Rasmus Anderson, and it's too premature to just go up to him and say, hey, what are your plans in a year and a half? What are you going to do here? Let's make a definitive choice right now.
And he's not going to tell
him either. Of course he's not going to tell. But if it does come to such a time where he opts to perhaps test free agency, then yeah, if you can go get an Elias Lindholm-like return, at that point, that would be the best case scenario.
This from Randy. Would you rather have Lindholm or Kadri, even at the same contract? My choice is Kadri. And honestly, the fact that Kadri has, I mean, I was listening to his media on Thursday morning, just talking about, you know, just hearing him say things like, you know, I'm so happy we drafted Matt Coronato, and that's why, and you're just like, yeah, that's what you want to hear. It's not they, it's not that. Like,
it's we.
Nazem Kadri is committed to being here. Nazem is committed to sticking this out. He's committed to getting them to a better spot. So, yeah, I'm always, especially knowing the way things have gone, I'm always going to choose guys who want to be here compared to guys who don't want to be here. What else we got here at 960? This says, what are your guys' thoughts on Lindholm and Huberdeau being the same type of player? By that, I mean both of them likely not what everyone thought they were, including the teams that got them. Both played with elite-level players, and add to that, Huberdeau played on a future Stanley Cup-winning team. Now they're languishing a bit. I don't know. I
the only comparison I see is that both have, in terms of production, both have underperformed to the expectation in which they were
of the contract. Yeah, that's probably fair. Although it is still early for Lindholm in Boston. It's now season 3 for Huberdeau here in Calgary. Okay. Hey, I thought the text line might jump in and might have some thoughts on the Elias Lindholm conversation. And he will play the Flames for the first time as a member of the Bruins Thursday night when the Flames look to make it back-to-back wins. They're into Boston on Thursday. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. He's Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Flames Roundtable now brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, now the voice of the Flames. Derek Wills joins us to complete our Thursday Daily Flames Roundtable, and we do have some roster news. We haven't really touched on this. In fact, did not touch on this at all in the first half of the hour, Wilsey, and that is Anthony Mantha to injured reserve. So he is going to miss at least the next three games for the Flames. He won't play Thursday in Boston, won't play Saturday in Buffalo, and won't play Monday against Los Angeles. Eligible to return at the earliest Tuesday on the road in Vancouver. Dryden Hunt is the player the Flames have decided to recall. Almost a point per game with the Wranglers so far this season. Guys, what's our reaction to the Mantha news mixed with the Dryden Hunt recall?
Not surprised in either regard. Anthony Montreal leaves the game late in the first period on Tuesday night and doesn't come back. And that he was out of that game with a little... That raised a bit of a red flag for me. The team practiced here in Boston yesterday. He didn't skate. I did see him walking around. Looked around okay with a little bit of a limp, but the Flames told us yesterday and Coach Ryan Huska earlier today, they were still waiting to get some test results, and obviously those came in, and wasn't best-case scenario for Anthony Mantha, who's going to miss at least the next few games. But as far as Dryden Hunt is concerned, I thought Adam Sopka would be an easy guy to recall since he's spent most of the season with the Flames anyway. But thinking about Dryden Hunt and what a strong preseason he had and the versatility he offers, being able to play all three forward positions, and the fact that he's got lots of NHL experience. He's got 230 games under his belt, including 28 with the Flames last season. The recall does make some sense. I think Ryan Huska is a pretty big fan of Dryden Hunt. You know what you're going to get. He's a guy who plays with a lot of energy, and I think that's what you're looking for, assuming if he plays, he'll play in a fourth line role for this team.
Yeah, I wouldn't be up in arms if it was Adam Klapka. I wouldn't be screaming on a rooftop going, how could you do this to Dryden Hunt? But at the same time, to me, Dryden Hunt was probably the most logical player to bring up. One, you just assigned Adam Klapka not too long ago, so you're trying to get him comfortable with the Wranglers, and then you're going to pull him back up, and then you're going to put him back down when Anthony Mantha is healthy again. And that can be a lot of sort of juggling a little bit for a younger player. So bringing up a veteran in the 28-year-old Hunt, to me, makes sense. I agree with you, Wilsey. I thought he had an absolutely fantastic training camp. And if it wasn't for the likes of Matt Coronato, Adam Klapka, and Sam Honzik, I had Hunt penciled in on my opening night roster. Now, you love it from an organizational perspective when you have young players come and push through training camp and make the roster in early October, and that pushes some of your more veteran players that might have played just as well, but you got to give the young players a shot. Well, now Dryden Hunt comes up in the wake of an Anthony Mantha IR stint, and this is an opportunity that he earned for me both in training camp and through a dozen games with the Wranglers. He had 2 goals and 8 assists for 10 points in 12 games and a +9 rating. Like, he's done everything down there that you could possibly ask for him, from him, and he gets rewarded a little bit. And I like the idea of Hunt over a couple other guys. I mentioned why for Klapka. Same thing sort of applies to a degree to a player like Rory Cairns, who's a center, but you don't want to be playing him out of position, and he's found some traction. 9 goals in 12 games with the Wranglers, and you'd like to sort of leave him unsettled a little bit. Same goes for Jacob Pelletier, for example, or a Sam Morton, who I also thought had a pretty positive training camp. For me, it was between Klapka and Hunt, and the fact that Hunt gets the nod isn't a significant surprise for me.
Yeah, when Wilsey, when Vix and I did our little power rankings of it on Wednesday's show, my power rankings were Klapka 1, Hunt 2 in terms of who would be the recall option. And the only reason Klapka was ahead of Hunt was because he has the right shot. But, you know, your point, like, I think it's what is very important to point out is how much Ryan Huska loves Dryden Hunt. There's no doubt about that. Hunt is the perfect quad A guy right now. He can play big minutes, top 6 minutes in the American League, and can be an effective bottom six, fourth line guy in the NHL. So I get why he's the guy they're recalling. It's interesting, guys, because, you know, Wilsey, you always made this reference when We talked a lot about Austin Zarnik. Remember Austin Zarnik is a member of the Flames and such a good player in the American League, but seemed to have trouble translating that to lesser ice time and a different role in the NHL, and that never really worked out for him. And Hunt does not have that problem. He is able to translate what he does to a fourth-line role if that's what he's asked to do in the NHL. So I get the recall. I get the reasoning why they go Dryden Hunt. And I'm really curious as to the Mantha situation. Still under evaluation was the word from Ryan Huska on Thursday morning, and you're starting to wonder, okay, like what is this situation with Mantha? All we know now is that he's on injured reserve, and we don't have a timeline and don't really have an update. So that starts to make you wonder what this situation is with Mantha. But on the Hunt front, I absolutely understand why he's the guy they decided to go with.
Yeah, and here's the other thing to consider. There's no guarantee that Dryden Hunt's even going to play. We don't know how long Anthony Mantha is going to be out. And we don't know if they're just going to play Kevin Rooney at center and Justin Kirkland on right fourth line B. So if you're going to call somebody up and you don't necessarily intend to play him, then I think Dryden Hunt is the perfect guy to call up. Again, he's an older player, lots of NHL experience, probably will be ready to play. Even if he doesn't play right away, he'll have the right practice habits and keep himself in a position to hit the ground running if he does get in. Player is still developing. So tonight against the Bruins, we know that Kevin with Ryan Lomberg and Justin Kirkland, and depending on how this game goes, maybe they stick with those same three the Sabres. If the game doesn't go well and they want to make a change, then yeah, you can put Dryden Hunt in there and you can really sub York Kirkland. So we'll see what happens here, but I think a good recall for the Flames for a number of reasons.
Yeah, that's a good point too, Willsy, is there's no guarantee that whoever was going to get recalled is going to actually see game time. So doing that for Dryden Hunt as opposed to an Adam Klapka perhaps makes a little bit more sense from an organizational perspective, because if you do go back on Saturday on an early Saturday Mountain Time game, you have the ability to keep Rooney and Kirkland both in the lineup and just roll with that. And then you come back home to play the Kings on Monday, but then you're off to Vancouver on Tuesday. So you do have a back-to-back scenario where, and we don't have a full timeline, obviously, on Anthony Mantha. We don't know if he'll be ready to go for that Tuesday game against the Vancouver Canucks. But just having back-to-back with a little bit of travel from Calgary to Vancouver, not significant, but you do have that back-to-back with a plane ride in between, offers you the ability, if you want to put in a more veteran player like Dryden Hunt, he can slide in. Or if it's a case where you just want to roll with what you've got, you're not sort of disrupting a 24-year-old player in terms of when he's trying to get used to being with a new team, then up with the Flames, then back with a new team.
That's a really good point. I mean, you know, Dryden Hunt is not old by any means. He's 28.
He's experienced. He's seasoned.
Experienced, and he's used to this role at the NHL. He's used to, at times, being in a fourth-line role, or maybe at times being in the press box. And so, yeah, I think for those reasons, too, is really important if that is the way it ends up going. Okay, Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek,
let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since I don't have access to the text line, is it blowing up with people saying, why didn't they recall one of the younger guys?
Not really. Honestly, not really.
No?
And same thing on social media. I mean, certainly some, like, why didn't they bring up Karens or what? But as we talked about on Wednesday's roundtable, I think letting Karens continuing to cook in the American League and let him continue to build confidence, and he's playing center in the American League. Like, just let him continue to do that as opposed to coming up and maybe being in and out of the lineup, maybe playing 8 minutes. I think you can apply that to Pelche. I think you can apply that to Morton. Heck, you could even apply that to Klapka if you really wanted. Whereas Dryden Hunt, Walker Dewar, if it was going to be one of those two guys, you're a whole lot more comfortable with those guys being in fourth line roles, A, and B, sometimes not playing. The other ones, you want them all to be playing, right?
Yeah, you do. And the more I think about it, and I know I said that Adam Klapka would be my choice when we talked about this yesterday, but, you know, he's only played a couple of games down there and hasn't played a ton this season. So I think it's important to get him playing and keep him playing so that when you need him, and I'm sure he will get recalled by the Flames at some point in time this season, again, he's in a position to succeed. So, yeah, Dryden Hunt makes all the sense in the world. And now that I've had more time to think about it over the last 24 hours, I think the Flames made the right choice.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Aaron, Steinberg on this Thursday. Guys, where are we on Calgary's power play units right now? When, look, Anthony Mantha is obviously going to come off of one of those units because he's not going to play for the little for the next little while. But where are we on the units? We know the power play has really struggled the last nine games or so. When's the time to start thinking about maybe some more drastic movement on their power play units as opposed to some of the little tweaks that we've seen early on?
Well, I mean, they are really struggling. They are 1-for-21 in their last eight games. So something's got to give. And if they don't start scoring some power play goals, and if they don't stop surrendering shorthanded goals, it's kind of a double-edged sword there, then Ryan Huska probably will ask Cale MacLean to make some changes to the power play personnel. Now, they have done some mixing and matching because they, of course, sat down Andre Kuzmenko and took him off the first unit for a game, and then he was back on there. So the power play units at practice yesterday were Huberto, Kadri, Kuzmenko, Sharon Govich, and Uyghur on a power play one, and then Backlund, Coronado, Zeri, Anderson, and Barry on power play two. And power play two has changed as well. So when Tyson Barrie plays, they go with three forwards and two defensemen. When he doesn't, they've gone more often than not with four forwards and one defenseman, kind of like with their first unit. So for me, guys, it's not really about personnel. It's about how that personnel executes. And I am a strong believer, and Ryan Huska said this himself today, when you're struggling in the power play, you have to simplify. So get pucks to the net. Get bodies to the net. Good things tend to happen if you do those two things. And they've got a first unit that has been together for a long time, going back to last season. And they've got a second unit that I actually think has been better than the first unit of late. So for me, it's not who they have out there. It's what those guys are doing while they're out there. And, you know, they went through a funk, 0-for-18, I believe, before they finally snapped that streak. And yeah, special teams can be streaky. So maybe they're about to go on a bit of a run here. And, you know, tonight, maybe just with the doctor order, the Bruins take more penalty minutes per game than any team in the NHL, and their penalty kills really struggled. So maybe the Flames power play gets in a bit of a heater. But for me, it's not about the guys who are out there. I just think they have to do a better job executing.
I agree, Wilsey, because from my perspective, and I'm not an NHL coach and nobody's going to put me in charge of a power play anytime soon, but the biggest gripe I have with the power play is the fact that they can't seamlessly gain the zone. They can't gain that blue line. And whenever they falter on a zone entry, the puck goes back another 180 feet and kills another 20 to 25 seconds off the clock as you reset. So what I've seen when they're actually set and operating hasn't been a five alarm bell for me in terms of, oh, they need to take three guys off this unit and swap in new bodies. It's more gaining the zone so you have more time to actually execute what you're trying to do. And the other thing I would like to see them get back to perhaps a little bit more, and this probably kind of skews towards the fact that they don't have a lot of in zone time on the power play, is I really liked and appreciated when it was Jonathan Huberdeau and Kuzmenko working below the goal line and working it back and forth to each other, because that makes the goalie have to constantly move, constant head on a swivel. Same thing with the defenseman coming down to challenge. So you're taking away some time and space, and a couple of those quick passes ends up opening a guy on either side of the flank or maybe even at the bottom of the slot. I'd like to see them try that a little bit more. But to me, that's not something you can just go in and try every single power play. It's sort of a change up, if you will, to keep the penalty kill on their toes. But when you're only in the zone for 30 or 45 seconds of a 2-minute power play, you don't really get afforded the luxury, the option to call an audible and move to that play, just simply because you're spending so much time trying to set up. So when it comes to, do they need to overhaul the personnel? I don't necessarily think that's it, but if they need to add a body there that they feel more confident will actually gain the zone so they can set things up to go to work, I'm in favor of that.
If it doesn't start to work, whether it's entries or not, if it doesn't start to become more of a threat, more of a momentum builder, hell, if it could just stop being a momentum killer most nights, that would be a step forward for it. And so if that doesn't start to happen, I'm making drastic changes. Like right now, you've got a stacked one unit and a bit of a drop off on the two. Like, and I'm not saying you don't go back to it, but even if it's for a little bit of time, just to like see if you can get some traction before changing it back, spreading things out, I'm all for. Like, if you want to move Zeri from one unit to the other, I think that he, the how dynamic and confident he is with the puck, I think he'd be a really nice addition to that number one unit. If you wanted to swap Barry and Uyghur for a little bit, I mean, that's not saying that Uyghur's done a poor job on the number one unit. I just think sometimes being different for the sake of being different, there is some value in that, especially when something is struggling as mightily as Calgary's power play has struggled since the beginning of the season, and they got off to a decent start. So does it have to be for Thursday night in Boston, or does it have to be for Saturday morning in Buffalo? No, I don't think there's like it has to be, you know, if it doesn't do it tonight, you got to do it on Saturday. I just think we're getting to the point where it's been as anemic as this that if you're Cale MacLean and the coaching and Ryan Huska and the coaching staff, kind of have to say, all right, well, this isn't working. Maybe we do try something different personnel-wise to see if that can help us. So, yeah, I think we're pretty close to it being to that point. Not saying that I disagree with you guys, because I do think that there's an execution thing, and I do think that there's a potential that these units could start going, because we saw it for the final 25 games of last year, especially with that number one unit. But I don't know, we're getting towards the first quarter of the season, and that feels like maybe a good time to start reevaluating things that haven't worked. And so far, the power play has definitely been one of those things.
Yeah, and thankfully for the Flames, they've been really good 5-on-5, which has helped them overcome the fact that their power play looks a lot like it did for the first two-thirds or three-quarters of last season, and their penalty kill doesn't look like it did last season when they were top 10 in the league. Now, you threw a couple of interesting ones out there, Pat. So I would say, and this isn't me taking a shot at Mackenzie Uyghur coming off a career year, but I don't think he's been as good getting the puck to the net from the point as he was last year, especially late last season. And swapping him and Tyson Barry would make some sense to me, because the last power play goal the Flames scored was on a Barry shot from the point. So that makes some sense. You talk about Connor Zeri. We saw him briefly on that first power play unit. Hey, if Matt Coronato keeps playing the way he's playing, maybe you give him some PP one time. So yeah, we're probably getting close to the point where they start to make some changes, even if they're more short-term changes to get the power play going than long-term changes that we're going to see from now until the end of time. So we'll have to wait and see what happens here. But you know, I suspect power plays are going to be important in this game against the Bruins. They're going to be in bad mood coming off a 4-0 loss to the Maple Leafs and having given up 3 power play goals in that game. So we'll see if the Flames can get going tonight. And if they can, then maybe we change our tune tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're sitting 23rd overall in the NHL with power play percentage of 15.8, that's with the good start. Yeah. And to Pat's point, the flip side is an absolute momentum killer. Something, whatever it is, whether it's personnel change, whether it's tackling zone entries a little bit different, whether it's dump and chase, it doesn't matter what it is, something needs to be done to spark up power play that at one point ran cold for 18 straight.
Yep.
I'll give you guys one more thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Win some damn face-offs.
That would help.
Yep.
You talk about zone entries, and you're bang on. Like, zone entries have been a challenge, but guess what? If you win the face-off, you don't have to enter the zone. You've already established possession of the puck and you're set up in the offensive zone. They have one regular faceoff man, who is at 50%. Nobody's above. Yegor Sharangovich, who's hardly played because he missed the first 7 games of the season, has been their best faceoff man this season. They're going to have to be better in the circle, especially on special teams.
Yep. I'm just quickly trying to see if I can stall for myself for just a second. Yeah, there we go. Since October 22nd, the Flames, which is when, so their good start had them score power play goals in 1, 2, 3, 4. For their first 5 games, they scored power play goals in.
Oh, no.
Since that time, they are 32nd overall with a 4.8% power play. So since October 22nd, no, it's a very small sample size, but that would be still their last quick, here's 8 some more games. Quick math. Last 8 games. So October 22nd to now, ranked last at under 5%. So the fact that they're sitting at 23rd is a credit to what they did in the first five games. It's been dismal.
Because the last eight, you're clicking at 4.8%. Probably not a coincidence. You're only 3-5 in that stretch.
Yeah, also true.
And the fact that they're two games above 500, tied for third place in the Pacific Division, despite struggling mightily on both sides of special teams, I think says a lot about how good they've been 5-on-5, fellas.
Yeah, the penalty kills 69.2 during that same eight-game span, which is... Where is it here? 26th overall. So still not ideal.
A couple of nights where they have won games without winning the special teams battle, which is not always easy to do. So no doubt about it. Thank you, Wilsey. We will talk to you on Friday's roundtable. Be well, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
And good work from Wilsey. Quick little technical switch while you were talking to get those technical difficulties done on the road. See, pros everywhere. I like it. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable. As we start to wrap things up this hour, thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers this hour, and the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.